Everyone, welcome to another edition of Fighting Ever Fighting. I'm Go Power Cat publisher Tim Fitzgerald. This is the podcast by K-Staters about K-Staters. We got a brand new K-Stater coming on this episode. I've been waiting for this guy, not because he wasn't available, but I wanted to get him on after spring football. I wanted him to see what he had so we could talk about it. We get into that a little bit. Jordan Peterson is the young defensive coordinator for Kansas State. And I say that because he is pushing 40, and I don't know how old you are, but to some of you, that might be old, and to me, unfortunately, that is still young, but he has the energy of an even younger man. He brings that to the table, and I think that's really good for the players to see such kind of energy, intensity, and passion for the game from their defensive coordinator. So much of defense is about passion and focus and energy, and you know what? You got to be cerebral too, but you get on the offensive side of the ball and it's a little bit more X's and O's. And Jordan Peterson, while he's going to coach this team to do certain things and play a certain way, go get ball, sick ball will be kind of his themes here. And you'll pick that up as we go through this episode and discussion with him. He's a great guy, fantastic fit, and he seems to really like Manhattan, Kansas, so that alone makes him a very likable person. Jordan played at Texas A&M, started his career as a grad assistant there, launched into coaching at Fresno State, New Mexico, and then a place called the University of Kansas, and he spent a number of years there before going back to his alma mater 2 years ago, arriving in College Station again at the same time Colin Klein arrived. And those two obviously bonded through a mutual respect of the jobs that they were doing. And now they're here together with Colin Klein as the head coach in Manhattan and Jordan Peterson as the defensive coordinator. He's very entertaining, and very thoughtful, and he knows his football. This is going to be a fun discussion, so strap it in. Here we go. Here's Jordan Peterson, the new defensive coordinator for Kansas State from his office somewhere in this town. Now we are joined by Jordan Peterson from his spacious veneer complex office. Coach, appreciate it very much. Been a little hectic. Have you taken any Jordan time since arriving in Manhattan, Kansas?
No, not really. I mean, we had spring break where the kids all got a chance to go and I got to go back to see the family. So I spent a little bit of time with them. But outside of that, no, not so much. It's all Wildcat time.
It has to be right now, doesn't it? I mean, your profession is always hectic, but restarting a program, basically setting up shop with a new head coach in a new place, a lot to be done. Do you feel like you're keeping up or just barely keeping your head above water?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of get used to the cycle of what this new world of college football is. Anytime it's a new staff, right, that there's going to be, it's going to be a little bit more tumultuous and you're going to have to get adjusted faster and you're just going to have to kind of go with the flow to a certain extent and try to stay out in front of things and try to be as proactive as you can, not only with your current roster, but, you know, we had dealt with the transfer portal. Then you're trying to get prepared for spring ball and get rolling with that while at the same time trying to play catch up with the 27 recruiting and start looking at 28s to make sure that you don't find yourself in a vicious cycle of being behind for the next class too, from a relationship standpoint. It is what it is. I think that from a staffing standpoint, we have a really good group of guys that are like, understand what it takes. And so although there's not much time for relaxing, I think that's what we all signed up for.
Well, that's good. That's good. It's gotta be daunting, but you seem to have a pretty good boss. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that spends much time yelling and screaming at you. What's it like working with Colin?
So before A&M, I had known him, obviously having coached against him when he was a player, and then obviously going against him coach to coach. Yep. And we had kind of run into each other recruiting wise, but getting a chance to be with him, you know, for two solid years at A&M the last couple of years. You know, he's very, very, you know, meticulous, very organized, very professional with how he approaches things, you know, obviously from a teaching progression standpoint and relationship standpoint with the players. you know, he's really second to none. Like, he's really, really easy to go talk to, which is a lot of time there's a barrier there. Easy to talk to versus holding people to a standard don't always have to be mutually exclusive, right? And so I think he does a really good job of playing with that line. And then from a staffing standpoint, like, obviously he expects everybody to be elite at what they do, right? And so there's a standard in the office of what that looks like. And he does a really good job of leading. He's a good leader of people.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you returned to your alma mater A&M the same time he arrived from Kansas State.
Correct.
When did you guys kind of connect? Because you guys seem, I'm going to say it, you got vastly different personalities. And yet I can see why you two connected.
Well, I think just naturally over the course of working together, you hear each other talk in staff meetings, right? Even though we're on opposite sides of the ball, you're in a full staff meeting, you're talking. And then over time, you kind of, you feel who you gravitate towards, like, who do you have the most in common with? Maybe, again, maybe not personality types, but like, what's important to you, how you approach your players, like some of those same kind of things that we talked about earlier. And I think just over time, you just kind of gravitate towards those people. And, you find out people that want to be elite naturally gravitate towards those kind of people as well. And whereas the other can't be said, right? Yeah. And so like-minded individuals kind of go together. So it didn't take long for us to kind of hit it off during our time at A&M. And obviously now we're here, you know, reunited and joined forces here.
You made it back to your alma mater. Was it hard to leave after just 2 years?
Well, so for sure. I mean, there was an element to, obviously we're back. I proposed to my wife on Kyle Field when I was a GA, right? She grew up in Katy, you know, just west of Houston. I grew up a little bit closer to Austin. So really like an hour either direction of family. Right. And, I always told people this, even when I was recruiting at A&M, is like, you know, there would be real conversations. Like, coach, do you think you're going to be here? And I always told people, like, it would have to take the right opportunity at the right program, right? That was built for success and like had a history of football being really, really important and investing in football. So culturally had to be right. And then it had to be with the right leadership. It had to be with the right, you know, head man that aligned the things that I felt like were important. And so even some of the guys that I signed last year before I took this job, like I called them just to make sure, like, you know, do the right thing and talk to them about it. And every single one of them, like, coach, like, we're disappointed, but like, we get it. Like, this is exactly what you said would be the only way you would leave. And so it ended up being a perfect situation for myself and my family to come here to K-State with, you know, Coach Klein, and really excited about it.
Were the Yale leaders present for the proposal?
No. I couldn't get that one done.
That would have been the most A&M thing ever.
You know, I did. Well, I did have, I was able to pull some strings and get the Jumbotron on. Nice. So that did happen. I thought I planned it out well, but unfortunately, like 30 minutes after, you know, we're taking some pictures out there, the sprinklers came on. I was like, oh, I didn't think of that. We got to get out of here, you know?
Yeah, that'll ruin things real fast. Interesting career journey. Fresno, New Mexico, then you end up in Kansas. So you come to the Big 12. What were your thoughts? I mean, when you get to KU, Coach Leipold's going to get ready to take on a major project here. What were your thoughts heading into that job?
Well, so my last 2 years at A&M, when I was a GA, we were still in the Big 12.
Yep.
And so, you know, I played at A&M during the Big 12 years. So there was some familiarity opponent wise. And then I actually got hired by Les Miles on his second year. So I spent one season with him. And then when Lance came in, decided to retain me. And so still appreciative of that. Cause obviously that was the timing of all of that. I don't know if you remember, it's kind of weird. It was like an April change. Yeah. You know, but like at the end of the day, every year, every conference evolves to a certain extent. Like, you know, it went from when I was the back end of my playing career where it was everybody was wide open, spread offenses, tempo, you know, then it went through, you know, the old Iowa State days of they were getting in 13 personnel and kind of mixing those big tight ends into both power run game along with spread sets. And so it's ever evolving. The thing that I always was impressed with Big 12 offenses is they kind of like it runs the gamut, right? Like you get a wide variety of offensive types, you know, and then I think that's what my next item and agenda is going back through every single game of every opponent over the next couple of weeks, just to kind of get a feel for, okay, how much has it changed? Is it really changed that much, or is it kind of similar to whenever I left?
Well, you'll appreciate this. It's changed quite a bit. We got rid of Texas. That helped the conference quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, with Texas and OU going to the SEC, obviously that changed things and made it a little bit more wide open.
Yeah, it did. It certainly did. But what were your thoughts now that you're in this version, the 16 school version of the conference? What are your thoughts on the Big 12?
Well, you know, it's the most competitive by the stats. Like it's not arguable. Like the Big 12 last year had the lowest margin of victory per game in conference play than any other conference. So like when we say it's wide open, it really is. And so I'm excited about, you know, details always matter, but we talk about a small margin of victory, like the details really matter. The coaching progression matters. The details at which the players can execute things at a high level when the bullets are flying are more important than ever. You know, and despite being a first year staff, like we're coming in here to do it as much as we possibly can to make that happen.
Let's dig into your philosophies a little bit. You've been kind of vague, which I appreciate. I understand. You're going to be multiple. That doesn't mean anything other than multiple, by the way. I can't derive anything from that.
By design.
Yep. But your general philosophy, you strike me by personality that you're going to have a lot of aggression to the way you want to play defense. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. And I don't think that always has to correlate directly to the types of call, right? Like, I think like, sure, your blitz percentage is going to be your blitz percentage, but like, this is a violent game and it's a game that you better have the right kind of intentionality and purpose. Right. And so I think just the approach every single snap, regardless of call, has to be with some kind of violent intent, right? You can't place your hands when you're trying to, you know, defeat a block, right? You got to strike, you got to create separation, right? You got to create knockback. And so just in general, philosophically, it's a violent approach to defense. So I think that's where it all starts, is like, take the call out of it, right? If we make the best call possible versus the offensive play, and we don't play with the right intent and purpose, it doesn't matter. They're still going to gain yards, right? And vice versa. I could make the worst call possible, but if we play with violent intent, there's a chance that you can still be successful in the worst possible call, right?
Yep.
And so I think that's the give and take of the conversation, is like, we've got to be able to play the game the way it's supposed to be played.
Yeah, you're correct. With that in mind, have you noticed a change in, you know, coaches always say kids don't change. I think they have a little bit over the last 15, 16 years of your coaching career. Have you seen any changes in how kids approach the game, or maybe prepare for the game?
I think the biggest thing that I've noticed is used to, like even when I was playing, which it doesn't feel that long ago, but it was a long time ago. The coaches told you to do something, you just did it. Right. Mm-hmm. And you never questioned anything. Right. So I think now more than ever, teaching and getting the guys to understand the why, because that's the first thing that guys want to know, is like, well, okay, why are we doing it this way? Right. And so building that into the teaching progression of, okay, this is how, this is your eye progression. This is your, this is the half fill calls, this is the half fill checks. Okay, great. Now this is why we're teaching it this way. And this is how the pieces all go together. I think it's challenged coaches to be able to explain things more concisely, right? Which I think is awesome. I also believe, too, that a player, when he knows the intent of the call and the why, he can also execute it more effectively. So that's been the biggest thing that I think I've noticed. At the end of the day, guys love football or they don't. We're trying to bring as many guys as we can that love football, because they're going to maintain that hunger and that chip on the shoulder preparation. So the preparation has always been there. I think that with technology and the amount of cutups and the access to information and film has allowed guys to prepare more effectively than they used to, like when I was playing, just because they have more things at their disposal with the technology and how we're able to break games down. But for the most part, I would say that the why is the biggest difference.
Yeah, that's a great answer, because I think you just surmised why my high school athletic career failed, other than not being a great athlete, because I was asking the why in the 1980s. I don't, Coach, I don't agree with that at all. And that didn't go over that time.
No.
Always had problems keeping my mouth shut. What did you take from spring, what you saw from your defense?
Well, I'll say this. We got a lot of guys that are hungry. They're trying to be elite football players. So I'm excited about that, because if you don't have that as a starting point, like, you got a really big time uphill battle that you got to climb. And I do think that between the returning players and the pieces that we were able to add to the, from the portal, we got a pretty good feel for what our roster looks like and where we're at. And I think, you know, you kind of alluded to the fact that we want to be multiple on defense. Well, I think coaches mess it up when they say we're only going to be this and that alone, right? And don't have the flexibility to adjust based on your strengths and weaknesses on your roster, right? And so being able to have answers, because each year your strengths and weaknesses will be slightly different and sometimes significantly different, depending on your number of seniors and the transfer portal, all that. And I think that that's where, when you're able to put a package together that you feel like is flexible enough to cover up weaknesses and to allow your strengths to really take control of the game, I think that's where you can really do some special things.
Any position group kind of jump out at you in the spring and you said, yeah, this group could be really good?
Well, from top to bottom, like, I think the strongest position is a linebacker, just from the standpoint of, like, you have a heavy dose of guys that have playing experience. There's a little bit of guys that have a lot of untapped potential, like, that really flash, and you're like, oh man, like, we get this guy to fully understand what we're trying to get done and how it needs to be done. Like, he could be really special. So I'm really excited about seeing what that competition looks like as we get into fall camp and into the season. I think our edges can be disruptive, really, really disruptive football players. I think we've got some speed on the edge. I think we have a little bit more power than what people think we do, which is fine. So I'm pretty excited to see the depth and the versatility that we can use with some of those guys in that group. You know, I think some of those guys have the flexibility to be able to slide on the inside as well. We can become a pretty athletic front, particularly versus some of those really spread tempo offenses. Yeah. I feel like we got some flexibility there. And then the back end, like, that's, you know, that's always been my baby. I think we have a lot of pieces to work with, for sure, that have a really, really high upside. And we're still working through, okay, what are the best combination, like, regardless of position, what is the best combination for the back end and what that needs to look like to get the best available 11 on the field at any given time?
That's interesting, because when I look at your secondary personnel, I'm like, I don't know how they're going to put this together. They've got dudes. It's just, do you have them at the right spots? And how are you going to put this all constructed into a secondary that's cohesive? And that could be a challenge.
Well, that was, you know, as we finished the portal recruiting and the January recruiting, that was the number one objective as we got into the winter conditioning and our station work was, okay, we have these pieces that we feel like can fit. Okay, let's identify who's the best cover guys based on skill sets. You know, not all of them had tape, recent tape that we were able to go to see, you know, so, okay, who are the best outside guys? Who's the best nickel slot corner type guy, who can be an apex player, who can be the back guys and be backstops playing in the high hole, you know, and who can come in and support the run the most effectively, right? And so that was our number one objective even before spring. And I think we got a pretty good idea of some of those pieces, you know, where we need to slide guys. And I think our guys are so hungry, and like, they, most of them couldn't care less where we put them. You know, that's been kind of a refreshing deal. It's like, okay, I'm just trying to play, and we're trying to win games, right? And so whatever that looks like to get those best available 11, I think they're fully bought into that as well.
Well, that's good, because in this era, there's a lot of me, you know, there really is. They're getting paid, good for them. I'm not opposed to that at all. But sometimes the focus then shifts from team to, I got to get my stats, got to get my time on the field. It looks to me, at least, from the outside looking in, you guys put together a roster pretty damn quick that doesn't have a lot of that. That doesn't have a lot of me in it. It's a lot of us.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. Like, you know, the culture of Kansas State, right, as you know, historically been a very gritty, tough, like hardworking, like blue collar, like, and that's still the bulk of the roster and how this thing is made up. Right. And so that's a great starting point. And then as you're recruiting guys, I think it's very important, probably more now than ever, of like identifying guys that fit us, fit this place, fit our priorities and what we want our values to be. And, you know, although it's not it's never perfect, right? It mm-hmm. never is, right? Because if it was, you win a national championship every year, right? But I'll as you look
that,
at
by the way, I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah, I'm all in. And so like, I think that's really, really important as we dive in recruiting is like who fits us, right? It may not be the guy that necessarily has the best tape all the time, but like that same guy can destroy a locker room too, mm-hmm. right? And one guy, the beauty about football is one guy is not ever going to make that big of a difference, especially on defense, right? Quarterbacks are a little bit different, but like at the end of the day, I'm really excited about the culture of our locker room right now.
You bring that up and it's very interesting to me being an A&M guy. It's a much bigger university, much bigger setting than Kansas State, but they're both ag and engineering schools at heart. And I always have said that even though a lot of K-State students are maybe from Kansas City, they're not rural people. They get the focus of the very character of the university. You go to work,
yeah.
You go to work. And it strikes me that would be the same as College Station as Manhattan, Kansas.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, it has doubled in size. A&M has doubled in size since I played there, right? As far as just like the student population, which is crazy.
Crazy.
Again, it's less than 20 years ago. So I, with my family that hasn't had a chance to come up here yet, but not my immediate family, but like my extended family, I tell them, look, just imagine just College Station 20 years ago is Manhattan. You know, like that's how I kind of refer to it and reference it, whatever we're kind of going through and talking about it. But very similar, right? You're talking about, like we said earlier, like it's time to get to work. It's hard working, good humans, right? With great values. And like this community has been unbelievable since I've been here. And again, I haven't been in town all the time because I've been out on the road recruiting, but like the bit that I have been around and not at work, it's been awesome.
Well, plus Taylor Bratt's been your tour guide, so I don't know where he's taking you, and I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. You guys hit it off. He's something else, isn't he? He's the best.
Oh, he's awesome. You know, talk about a guy that bleeds purple, right? And like wants every piece of what's best for this university. You know, obviously it's hearing the passion and having people in the building that already possess that level of passion for a university, not just for the profession, right, is very refreshing. And he's as lifer of a K-Stater as you can become.
He really is. And he's young. He's got plenty of time to go.
Oh, yeah.
He's not Scott Eilert, who's been there. Well, I don't even want to talk about that. That's he went to work in a covered wagon the first time. So,
well, I'll say this. It says something about the place when you have people in this profession at a certain place for an extended period of time. Right. That does not happen that often.
I agree. So you did play against Kansas State and then you were a grad assistant when Colin was just getting his feet on the field. Memories of that?
Yeah. The 4 overtime game that we lost here when Colin, I think he carried the ball like 30 something times, you know. Yeah. Well, depends on what side you were on at the time. But what a game that was. I mean, just the back and forth and the grit, like that was the epitome of we're going to get in a phone booth. It's going to be a fist fight. We're going to see who walks out of here, you know, and what a game. Like that's the one that sticks out to me the most, to be honest with you.
It was something else. I made the mistake back then. The media could go down to the field with about 5 minutes left. I spent the next about 3 days on the sideline watching football because the game refused to end. Yeah. It was absolutely remarkable performance by both teams and Colin. Honestly, Colin was kind of the difference in that one.
Yeah.
Just because he willed his team across that finish line. And now that you've known him, it's almost like two different people exist inside that body. There's the kind, gentle Christian spirit, and there's an absolute warrior that is as competitive as anyone you'll ever meet. It's the duality of Colin Klein fascinates me.
Yeah, it's really impressive. It's compartmentalized up to a certain extent, right? Like it's who he is as a human, but then it's also that element of that competitive spirit, that warrior mentality that, you know, that doesn't just happen overnight. That's how you're raised. That's how you think. That's how that's in your DNA. Right. And if you get a whole roster full of guys that are like our head man, look out.
I'm curious. Did you guys show much film of Colin to the players of how he played? And this is your coach.
Well, I think that because we're back here, they're well aware.
Okay. You
know? So I don't know how much there are clips that we've shown for sure. And he's like, oh, what are we doing? You know, like one of those kind of things, but you know, cause he's so humble. But yeah, there's something to be said about when your head coach is in the Ring of Honor and his name's on the stadium, right? Like that, there's definitely an element to like, this place means something more to him than anybody else. Right. And so it's an awesome dynamic to have.
And also accentuated by the fact he's still a young guy. I mean, he played within the lifetime of the players, which is kind of crazy when you stop and think about normally head right. coaches are old crusty guys or used to be. They're getting younger now. I don't think Colin will ever be crusty. I don't see that happening.
None of us will, right?
No. The guy that's about to turn 62. But he paid the price in physical abuse and blood. He really did. And that's how he played. And I can't imagine him or you, from what I've learned about you, would want anything different from every single stinking player in that locker room.
Yeah. That's the only way that you play the game effectively, right? And there's an element to, you have it in yourself for sure. But then there's an element of your locker room brotherhood where I'm going to do whatever it takes to not let the guy next to me down. Right.
Right.
And that's where you can get some separation in this day and age of college football, right? Is can you create that connectivity where it's not just a teammate, it's your brother. Right. And I think that's where guys are coaching each other up. They're holding each other to a standard. They understand what that elite championship level execution looks like. And making sure that if somebody were to go below that standard, that somebody next to them is going to be like, yo, like, hey bro, that ain't it. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not always just coaches, which if it's coaches, cool. Like I'm all for that. Like I'll do it all day. But at the end of the day, your best teams are always going to be your player led teams.
Right. Right. You've talked about the locker room a lot. And I think that locker room is a area of a football team, not just a program, the specific team of that season that takes on a life of its own. And the fans can't really grasp that. The coaches know that this team isn't cohesive or a band of brothers. They know that, and it is reflected on the field. How do you get that, coach? How do you make sure you don't have an outlier in there that's causing problems?
Well, I think it's a couple things. Number one, it's not burying your head in the sand and acting like everything's fine, right? You know, I've been a part of teams over the course of my career where, you know, sometimes winning in and of itself can mask some of the underlying issues, yep. right? And so it's easy to just try to, okay, ignore it. Okay, that's not going to be a big deal. It's not a big deal till it is, right? And then whether that's in the middle of a game when adversity hits, right, and it rears its ugly head, or you lose a game and the response isn't where it needs to be. And so then all of a sudden it snowballs and the season goes the wrong direction, right? And so I think being proactive with it, and I still believe that the relationships coach to coach, coach to player, player to coach, player to player, all of those daily interactions may not seem like it matters that much at that moment, but the consistency and care factor for each other over the course of time naturally starts to create a significant bond, right? And so I think that every day pouring into each other is of the utmost importance, because you're going to every season, every game, almost every drive, you're going to face some version of adversity. And so like how do you lock arms as opposed to like point fingers, right? That's the bottom line.
Well, you said it. This conference has a lot of one score games, and not answering adversity once in a game can cost you the victory. It's that final line. Let's get to the important stuff. Is your family here yet?
So they move in. Well, we close next week. So I will get a chance to go fly back for my daughter's kindergarten graduation.
That's important.
Get to be there for that. She's been asking about it for like 3.5 weeks, and she doesn't know that I'm coming yet. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Hope she's not an avid watcher of this podcast, because it's going to get ruined.
Well, I'm going to have to just hide it from her, you know, like she's got it on her favorites. So
I bet,
you know, I'll fly down there for that. And like the next day we'll drive up, close on the house and, you know, start to get settled in. So I couldn't be more excited to get them here. Like we've never been apart this long, and the way that just the schedule worked out, it was hard to kind of get a house situated and whatnot, but, fired up about it.
That drive is just wonderful, by the way. It is it's a lovely drive.
9.5.
Constant station to you find a lot of long stretches of highway between Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas.
It's pretty simple. Highway 6 to 35 gets you most of the way.
Yep, you're right. Are you going to miss the fraternity house you've been living in?
Well, so they needed it back.
How selfish of the owners.
So very appreciative of my frat house time. I had to make the move and migrate over to the hotel. So between living in a hotel here and living on a hotel on the road recruiting, I'm about hoteled out. I'm ready to get into a house with, part of it was good because there was a lot of work to do and I needed to get it done. Feel like we're slowly catching up, and now it's time to have a little space.
And then you get the fun of moving into a house. It's always a joyful thing.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah. Moving is not one of my favorite activities. Okay. So important. Let's not do that for a long time.
Yeah. Important man stuff here. Did you let her make the choice? Was it a co-choice on the house?
I mean, I'm not the smartest human. Uh-huh. Okay. But I am never making those decisions.
Got it.
With the amount of time that we're not there, and with the kiddos at the house, like I just give the, hey, whatever you want, babe. Like, let's do it.
Well, keep the kids away from Taylor Brad. He'll teach them how to open beers and make cocktails, which are great skills. Just probably not when you're 5.
Not quite yet. Yeah,
might be a little early. Coach, I appreciate it so much. Thanks for the time. I know you're busy. Really happy that you're finally going to get your family here. That would suck so bad. I wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, it's that part's coming to an end. So I'm fired up about it. So I appreciate you.
You bet. I don't know about you, but I got a great feeling about this Kansas State football team, a great feeling about the defense. And I think everyone who's been around Jordan Peterson, whether it's a player, or as a coach, or anything else, understands the knowledge he brings to the game and also the fire he brings to the game. And let's be really honest. At times, I think we saw a lack of fire the last few seasons from Kansas State football. That appears to be changing in that locker room. The players sound bought in, invested, and appreciate the new zeal which they are being coached with. It's going to be fun. It's going to be great. We'll see how it goes. But we got a lot more of these to do before we can get to the actual games. So we'll be back next week with another edition of Fighting Ever Fighting. I appreciate you watching so much, and I'll talk to you real soon.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production.